Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, March 21st. 2024. SB4 blocked again, hours after Supreme Court ruling. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Washington, D.C. On Tuesday afternoon, the Supreme Court lifted the latest in a series of executive stays preventing Texas' controversial immigration law SB4 from taking effect. Citing procedural technicalities, Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh penned a decision in favor of giving Texas the green light to enforce the law, while the case got bumped back down to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Top Republican officials immediately took to social media to celebrate the win, but the celebration didn't last long. As the clock neared midnight on Tuesday evening, the Fifth Circuit pushed forward, blocking the law temporarily while oral arguments proceed on whether the law should stay suspended while litigation continues. SB4's journey through the courts has been a roller coaster ride. The law, which makes illegal immigration to the United States a state crime, has been the subject of litigation since it was signed into law in December. The law was originally supposed to take effect on March 5th, but a lawsuit filed by the national and state chapters of the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, and the Texas Civil Rights Project spiraled into a much larger issue after the Federal Department of Justice joined as a plaintiff in January. The central issue of the suit is whether or not the state has the authority to enforce immigration law, which has been the exclusive responsibility of the federal government for over 100 years of court precedent. Barrett and Kavanaugh's decision did not rule on whether or not SB4 is unconstitutional, but instead criticized the way that the Fifth Circuit handled the case. In Tuesday's ruling, Justice Barrett wrote that the lower court's decision to reverse a district judge's ruling without following the proper steps put the case in a very unusual procedural posture. In their dissent, Justices Jackson and Sotomayor doubled down on their colleagues' disappointment in the Fifth Circuit, writing that the court had developed a troubling habit in the way they approached the use of stays in court proceedings. Justice Elena Kagan penned her own dissenting opinion, quibbling with Barrett's interpretation of court procedure. A court's unreasoned decision should not spell the difference between respecting and revoking long-settled immigration law, she wrote. Barrett did not speak on the merits or shortcomings of SB4, but did explain that the case was not yet over. If a decision from the lower court does not issue soon, the applicants may return to this court, she wrote. Sotomayor, on the other hand, did detail her fears about how the law might affect both private citizens and court precedent, writing that the law was antithetical to the Constitution and invites further chaos and crisis in immigration enforcement. Responses to Tuesday's ruling have been predictably polarized. The government of Mexico fired back almost immediately, saying that they would not accept, under any circumstances, repatriations from the state of Texas, a cornerstone of the law. Republican Representative Tony Gonzalez, who represents the Big Bend region in Congress, expressed support. SB4 will give Texas the ability to enforce against illegal immigration and do what President Biden refuses to do, he wrote in a press release. Today's ruling on SB 4 by the Supreme Court is an important step forward in our fight to secure the southern border, and I stand by Texas as the state moves forward to enforce this legislation. Tech mogul Elon Musk, who visited the border with Gonzalez in September, responded to a tweet by Governor Greg Abbott celebrating a positive development in the suit. "Crazy that it wasn't a unanimous decision, but still good," Musk wrote. Immigration advocacy nonprofits, meanwhile, have interpreted the court's ruling as a call to action. Texas Impact, an interfaith organization that has been vocally opposed to Governor Abbott's stance on immigration, expressed grave concern and condemned the court system for all the legal whiplash. The Supreme Court's decision to allow enforcement of SB 4, while it is still under appeal in a lower court, will lead to additional confusion and fear, regardless of the eventual lower court outcome, wrote Executive Director B. Moorhead. Democrat Texas State Senator Cesar Blanco, who represents the Big Bend in the state legislature, voiced his opposition. "The Supreme Court's decision to uphold Texas enforcement of Senate Bill 4 is deeply troubling. Senate Bill 4 does nothing to solve the humanitarian crisis at our border and instead subjects Latinos who live and pay taxes in Texas to unjust profiling." The ACLU of Texas continued its campaign of educating people about their rights under the law while continuing its legal battle against the state. "We won't back down until this extreme anti-immigrant law is struck down for good," the organization tweeted. At press time, lawyers for the state and federal governments were headed to Austin for oral arguments. The Fifth Circuit will decide soon whether or not a measure blocking the law can stay in place while litigation continues. Photo by Hannah Gentiles for the Big Bend Sentinel. Gary Alexander, from Austin, is the leader of a caravan of vintage Volkswagens that began in Texarkana following Highway 67 west to Presidio. He kneels to say goodbye to a fellow VW driver who is making their exit back to East Texas. The Route 67 VW road trip landed at a celebration of food and music at the American Legion as it finally stopped in Presidio, Texas. Alleged Ojinaga cartel boss El Menchaca indicted on organized crime smuggling charges by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Pecos. On Monday, the Western District of Texas released a superseding indictment in the case of suspected cartel boss Sergio Menchaca Pizarro, also known as El Menchaca. The redacted indictment adds 11 as yet unnamed defendants to a case charging Menchaca and his associates with 6 counts of charges, including drug trafficking, human smuggling, and continuing criminal enterprise. Menchaca, a U.S. citizen, was arrested last August after being apprehended by Border Patrol along the River Road near Fort Layton. Homeland Security Investigations Special Agent Will Werner wrote in an affidavit that Border Patrol performed an immigration inspection, revealing that Menchaca had crossed the border at the river and not through an official port of entry. A week later, Judge David Fannin approved a motion by federal prosecution to detain Menchaca without bond. Assistant United States Attorney Jaime Esparza argued that Menchaca was a flight risk that posed a danger to the community who could potentially attempt to obstruct justice. In September, Menchaca was originally indicted on 3 counts, 2 marijuana smuggling charges and 1 failure to report charge, connected with his illegal entry into the United States. Though his arrest was covered by the press in northern Mexico and the United States, court documents did not make an explicit connection between Menchaca and the La Línea cartel. That didn't stop others from drawing conclusions. Citing confidential informants, the Dallas Morning News reported that Menchaca had revealed information about the location of a mass grave connected to the disappearance of migrants believed to be kidnapped or killed in cartel crossfire in September 2021. Monday's superseding indictment filled in many of the blanks. Menchaca and his unnamed co-defendants were allegedly members of La Línea, a faction of the Juarez cartel active in the Ojinaga area. The document outlines the general structure of the cartel, explaining that other groups could move contraband through La Línea territory for a fee, constituting a network of criminal conspirators within Mexico. Engaging in continuing a criminal enterprise is a federal crime with a minimum sentence of 20 years. The indictment alleges that Menchaca and his associates conspired to distribute and import marijuana over a period of about 15 years. The charges for each individual assume that 1,000 or more kilograms of the narcotic was involved, carrying a minimum sentence of 10 years apiece. The grand jury also found that drug smuggling led to other types of trafficking, namely of humans and arms. By controlling Ojinaga, other organizations would at times pay a fee or peso to La Línea in order to bring through undocumented aliens on their way to the United States, the document explains. La Línea also allegedly maintained armed security forces, also known as sicarios, thus allowing the organization to continue its criminal activities. In order to carry out the leader's commands, the sicarios needed firearms. Possessing a firearm is illegal in Mexico, and smuggling weapons out of the United States and into Mexico is a federal crime. The indictment does not include a separate charge for firearms smuggling, but does call for seizure and forfeiture of these weapons. Attorneys for both the United States and the defendants did not return requests for comment. Representative Tony Gonzalez to face the AK guy Brandon Herrera in Republican runoff. By Sam Karras, Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. U.S. House District 23. Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez was pushed into a runoff against social media influencer and Second Amendment advocate Brandon Herrera on Election Day, earning 45.1% of the vote to Herrera's 24.7%. Voters will head back to the polls in May to decide who will face Democratic nominee Santos Limón in the general election. House District 23, which includes the Big Bend, spans just over 800 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border from western San Antonio to the eastern fringes of El Paso. The district is massive only in terms of land acreage. It has one of the lowest population densities of any congressional districts nationwide. Incumbent Gonzalez is generally considered a moderate Republican to a degree that has drawn widespread criticism. After votes in favor of gun control and gay marriage, Gonzalez was censured by his own party in March 2023. Gonzalez also opposed H.R. 29, an immigration bill brought by fellow Texas Republican Chip Roy that would have essentially suspended the asylum-seeking process at the border, calling the measure anti-immigrant and unchristian. However, Gonzalez stands in favor of SB 4, a law that would allow Texas to enforce federal immigration law. Dark horse challenger Herrera comes from a vastly different background than Gonzalez, who followed a textbook college to military to Capitol Hill pipeline. Herrera reportedly joked that he may as well also be a veteran because I often think about putting a gun in my mouth. He has since denied the allegation. Herrera is an outspoken Second Amendment influencer with 3.2 million subscribers on YouTube, identifying as very politically incorrect. He also owns the AK Guy Incorporated, which makes a variety of semi-automatic weapons favored by aficionados, including the mythic AK-50. Before the primaries, Herrera went on tour through West Texas, stopping briefly in Fort Davis. He acknowledged that San Antonio is where he stands to win or lose the most votes, but hoped that he could get the rest of the vast District 23 on board. I think it's important to talk to the other communities, especially the border communities who haven't felt heard and feel like they're being forgotten about on a national scale, he told the Big Bend Sentinel in December. Herrera's campaign did not respond to multiple requests for comment for this article. Gonzalez's campaign stressed that not all of his talking points are about controversial issues, highlighting smaller wins that could make a big difference on everyday life in the Big Bend. In Presidio County, he signed a bill into law designating Marfa's Blackwell School as a National Historic Site and wrote a letter in support of the city's application for $120,500 to hire an additional police officer. He also secured $1 million in funding for the Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District in hopes of providing water service to underserved areas of the county. In Brewster County, he secured $1 million for Sol Ross State University's Archaeology, Anthropology, and Cultural Research Center project, as well as $2.5 million for the university's Midstream Cybersecurity Hub. He also helped procure funding for a new HVAC system at Marathon ISD. In Jeff Davis County, he won $1,346,800 for a new community center in Fort Davis and helped officially rename the town's post office after Sergeant Manuel Cillas Gonzalez. Gonzalez has also been active in earmarking border security funding for the Tri-County, including a provision in the FY24 National Defense Authorization Act that implemented an overtime pay raise for Border Patrol agents. In FY23, $1,945,000 was awarded to the Big Bend Sector counties through Operation Stone Garden. Opening ceremony for Lipan Apache Cemetery in Presidio to be held Saturday. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. This Saturday, all are invited to a series of events marking the completion of the restoration project at the Cementerio del Barrio de los Lipanes, Lipan Apache Cemetery, in Presidio, a project decades in the making. The people of La Junta for Preservation will be hosting an early morning prayer, followed by a run/march, through the Presidio Sandhills. The group will gather at the water tower at 7 a.m. for a moment of contemplation and will then greet the day with a run or walk through the desert. At 10 a.m., the Big Bend Conservation Alliance will be hosting a blessing and celebration in conjunction with the people of La Junta, the Lipan Apache Tribe of Texas, and MASS Design Group. Market Street will be blocked off for the event in honor of the community's indigenous past and indigenous future. The Lipan Apache Cemetery is a remnant of a much larger cemetery that was lost to city development in the 1970s. the descendants of the interred, part of a migratory indigenous group that came to La Junta during Spanish rule, have worked over the past few decades to protect the cemetery from further development. In 2021, Cristina Hernandez, a descendant of the Lipan Aguilar family, led the charge to return ownership of the land from the city and county of Presidio to the Lipan Apache tribe of Texas. The Big Bend Conservation Alliance, BBCA, then began a major project to stabilize the site and install interpretive materials with the help of MASS Design Group, an indigenous-led firm. BBCA has worked with Presidio ISD in the past few weeks to teach local youth about the significance of the cemetery. The program started in February with an assembly for high school students led by Orion Velasquez Ornelas about Presidio's native history. She encouraged students to get curious about their own families, but also to preserve the histories of others. I want you to think, I'm going to honor these people. I may not be related to them, but I still want to tell their story. The students also got creative. Both high school and middle school students sat down to make invitations for friends and family to the opening celebration. PHS graduate and Sel Ross professor Ramon Deanda made a special visit to the elementary school, where students were encouraged to make art and engage with Native storytelling. The program capped off in early March with a series of site visits by middle school students. Sixth grader Brianna Ramirez, who had helped make community invitations for the event, was honored to be a part of the process and was grateful to learn the story behind the cemetery. "It felt good to help their resting place be more beautiful," she said. Enrique Madrid, far right, and representatives from the Lipan Apache tribe of Texas attended a blessing ceremony at the inception of the cemetery project in 2021. Staff photo by Sam Karras. The Big Bend Sentinel partners with Presidio County Community Fund for Mental Health Reporting Series. MARFA. The Big Bend Sentinel is publishing a series of articles on mental and behavioral health, starting with next week's issue, which will provide an overview of the resources, or lack thereof, for those seeking help. The series is funded by a grant from the Presidio County Community Fund, started by Hillary and David Beebe, to help address a variety of challenges facing the Tri-County area. To highlight the series, the Presidio County Community Fund, the Sentinel, and the MARFA Municipal Alliance are sponsoring an event tonight, Thursday, March 21st, at 6 p.m., to benefit the Sims Foundation, a nonprofit in Austin that seeks to destigmatize and reduce mental health and substance abuse issues for the music community. The benefit will feature bands Primo and BB and the Grand Tourists as a tribute to Greg Inlow. Next week's article also includes a remembrance of one of the events that drove the BBs to first concentrate on mental health. The 2019 death of Inlow, a musician whom the BBs had come to know through David playing in bands together with him. Greg's suicide happened in 2019, the same year that David and I got married, and in the aftermath of his loss, we wanted to do something to serve the area, so we established the Community Fund, Hillary said. The BBs used their own money to kickstart the fund, which takes tax-deductible donations through the Community Foundation of Texas and also held fundraisers to build it. Public education seemed like a way to put these dollars to work in the community and really shed light on the issue, as well as point people to the resources that they need, and so I thought this reporting series could make a real impact. I think that there are resources out there for rural Texans who are struggling and for friends and family, but nobody necessarily knows where to go. Hillary said the future of the fund is open right now, meaning that the Beebes will continue to explore projects that can benefit the area. One of the things I like about this community fund is that it offers the flexibility to look at what issues we can have a significant impact on and pivot to work in those areas, she said. Tax-deductible contributions to the Presidio County Community Fund can be made online at www.portal.cftexas.org/the-presidio-county-community-fund or by check mailed to Communities Foundation of Texas. In the memo, write Presidio County Community Fund number F-01410. 5500 Carruth Haven Lane, Dallas, Texas, 75225. Donations to the Sims Foundation can be made at the event or online at www.simsfoundation.org/donate. This is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, March 21st, 2024, obituaries. Harris. Alice Jones Harris was born July 19, 1934, in El Paso, Texas, to Mr. and Mrs. George and Lillian Jones. Alice lived on the Double Circle Ranch in Eagle Creek, Arizona, where her father, George Jones, was a rancher and ran large numbers of cattle there until 1936. Due to financial and governmental issues, George then moved 22,000 head of cattle to a ranch close to Chihuahua, Mexico. Alice and her sister Sargi, while living in Mexico, became fluent in Spanish. The sisters were enrolled in Loreto, a boarding school in El Paso. It was there that Alice embraced her affection for soft teddy bears. The nuns of the school reached out to Lillian and told her that Alice was very homesick and she needed to be picked up. Alice went home for a weekend and returned to school with a teddy bear in her arms. Her love for the little fuzzy friends became a great comfort to her, and that lasted throughout her life as she held one through her last months in bed. She affectionately named him Beau Bear, and he literally never left her side. The Jones family moved back to Marfa, Texas in 1940 to continue to live and run cattle on the Billingsley Ranch and ultimately settled on the Kelly Ranch. While attending school in Marfa, Alice was the only student to ride a donkey to school. His name was Long Ears, and that was just another unique fact that caused Alice to stand out in a crowd. Alice's parents decided to send the girls off to school again, this time in Dallas, Texas. Sargi and Alice attended Hockaday, a school at which Alice participated in several sports, including field hockey, her favorite, field ball, diving, theater, and choir. She excelled and was the captain of her field hockey team. Lillian, an entrepreneur of her time, in order to pay for the cost of Hockaday, opened a cantina on the Jeff Davis County line. Presidio County was a dry county. Alice was introduced to Bryant Harris at the age of 17 by a friend who later became Sargi's husband. They went their separate ways to attend college, with Alice attending the University of Arizona and Bryant attending Texas Tech University. They reconnected and went on their first date in August of 1958 on a ranch in New Mexico near Magdalena. They stopped while driving back to the ranch house, and as God began uniting their hearts, they beheld a beautiful meteor shower. Bryant said, "The stars fell like rain." This began their journey together that lasted 87 years on this earth, but continues today through the incredible legacy left by Alice. They were married on November 28, 1958, at the Billingsley Ranch, located 18 miles from Marfa, Texas. Alice and Bryant lived in Lubbock, Texas for a short time, then Montana for vehicle maintenance school for Bryant's Air Force training. They then moved to Petaluma, California for 22 months before returning to the land Alice loved, ultimately staying and ranching on the Kelly Ranch at the foot of Mount Livermore in the Davis Mountains. One of Alice's favorite verses was Psalm 121. "I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth." She loved her life as a rancher's daughter, riding bareback, and as a rancher's wife and mother of her children, surrounded by the beauty of God's creation. Alice had 6 children, 5 who lived with her and Bryant for 17 years on the Kelly Ranch. Sarah, her last child, came early and went to be with her maker after only 3 days. Michelle, Holly, Amy, Ruthie, and Andrew experienced so many amazing adventures with their resourceful, loving, talented mom, who always put her family before herself every single day. Alice's love for theater continued through multiple outlets. She directed and had roles in several melodramas in the community, famous for her role as Mustache Agnes. She was an incredible seamstress. Thus, her talents were used in making elaborate costumes for Halloween, one-act plays, and skits to be performed at Blois Camp Meeting. She had a way of making everything better, funnier, and just plain fun, bringing light and laughter to the souls of those around her. 4-H speeches and poetry were important to her. She loved to see her children learn to overcome fear by being involved in speaking or acting events. She drove her children all over the state of Texas for stock shows, even pulling big trailers, UIL events, and lots of tennis tournaments. She had a love of tennis herself, and as her kids got older, with her natural athleticism, she quickly became a good tennis player. Difficult decisions were made, and in 1977, the family then moved to Brownwood, Texas. There, they began a new adventure with the Ike Gross family. Ike was the high school tennis coach there. After Amy's state finalist appearance in the UIL state tournament, the family then moved to Kerrville, ultimately ending up in San Antonio, Texas. Alice became affectionately known as Mill, which stands for mother-in-law, courtesy of Rick Perry, son-in-law married to her daughter Holly. Mill and Papa Bryant lived and loved their home in San Antonio for 44 years. Mill had such a way of making anyone feel like family, and in fact adopted so many along the way, even having some live with them for periods of time. One of Mill's favorite sayings was, "I love you anyway." She adopted many kids as their mom and touched them with her steady, unconditional, penetrating, and accepting way of loving as only she could do. Bryant often has said that she taught us all how to love. Mill's last year, and especially the last 8 months, were filled with some very difficult and hard times. Her legacy of strength, faith, unfailing love, and perseverance that she had sown into the lives of her husband, children, and grandchildren provided opportunities for them to give back to her. Andrew and Bryant lived this journey every single day, laying their lives down, taking on the multifaceted needs that come with home care. God provided help from outside the family as well, for which they were very thankful. As the family struggled to walk the journey, and as she almost exclusively reverted to speaking fluent Spanish, the most amazing miracles began to happen in the hearts of all who were privileged to care for her. Her immense love that knew no boundaries, her ability to see the good, and her own struggle with letting go of all those she loved so deeply forever impacted them and the generations to come. Mill and Papa have 19 grandchildren and 37 great-grandchildren. The family is so thankful for every day Mill lived on this earth, and she will live on through her family. And as Proverbs 31 states, her children and her husband rise up and call her blessed, because to her family was everything. A graveside service to honor Alice's life and legacy was held at Marfa City Cemetery in Marfa on March 14, 2024. Online condolences may be left at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Services have been entrusted to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home in Alpine, Texas.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. Comanche Springs Rodeo action begins tonight. The Comanche Springs Rodeo returns tonight and promises three action-packed nights of family fun. The action begins tonight at the County Coliseum with Rodeo Slack. The gates open at 6. Action starts at 6:30 and the Slack is free to attend. The real action begins Friday night with a family night where kids 12 and under are admitted free and adult tickets are $10. Family night will also include bounce houses for kids outside the arena, sponsored by Big Ben Telephone. The bounce houses will open around 5:30, with gates for the rodeo opening at 6:30. Kids will have a chance to compete in mutton busting and boot scrambles both nights of the rodeo. Saturday's activities kick off with the parade at 10 a.m. from Rio Street. The rodeo performance begins at 7:30 p.m., The rodeo dance featuring State Line Band begins at 9 next door at the Pecos County Civic Center and is free to all. Saturday's admission is $10 for adults, $5 for kids ages 6 to 12, and under 5 are free. The indoor concession stand in the Coliseum lobby will sell soda, water, cotton candy, popcorn, pickles, and beer. Other concession sales will be in the vendor outside in the area, in the ID parking lot. Beer tickets can be purchased in the parking lot as well, and anyone who plans to purchase alcohol would need to obtain a wristband. In conjunction with the rodeo, the Tyler Magnus team roping will take place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday open roping begins at 10 and Sunday open roping at 9, with Saturday's Comanche Classic beginning at 10. For more info on the roping, call Tyler at 512-940-4786. Events for the rodeo include bareback, saddle bronc, ranch bronc, team roping, steer wrestling, and bulls, as well as ladies' barrels and tie-down. The 2024 Miss Rodeo Comanche Springs pageant takes place March 22nd, 23rd. The 2023 royalty is Miss Rodeo Comanche Springs Kayleen Kimones. Miss Rodeo Comanche Springs teen is Kendall McCombs. Princess is Sadie Woods, and sweetheart is Kinsley Morris. Enjoy an evening of bluegrass music at Fort Stockton Community Theater, April 2nd. Community Theater is proud to present Dan Mazur, a.k.a. Banjer Dan, for an evening of down home bluegrass music on Tuesday, April 2nd at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 at the Nelson Street Theater. According to Banjer Dan's website, Dan is a banjo-centric acoustic musician and entertainer based in Santa Cruz County, California. His music is an American mix rooted in straight-ahead bluegrass and branches out to include country, folk, blues, oldies, and other styles. Dan, who was raised in the Washington, D.C. area, started playing Scruggs-style banjo as a teenager. His primary instrument is the five-string banjo, but he also plays guitar, mandolin, and dobro. He has performed all over the U.S. and internationally as a solo artist in theatrical productions and symphony orchestras and several bands. He has performed in Opryland, USA, the High Sierra Music Festival, and the Kennedy Center of the Performing Arts, to name a few, and now the Nelson Street Theater of Fort Stockton. Tickets may be purchased online at fscommunitytheater.org with credit card or at the door with cash or check for $10 each. Come one, come all to enjoy an evening of musical entertainment. Your guide to local places and things to do. March 21st, 23rd, high school junior varsity softball tournament at Fort Stockton. March 21st, Comanche Springs Rodeo Slack, Pecos County Coliseum, 6 p.m. 22nd to 23rd, Rodeo, Pecos County Coliseum, 7:30 p.m. 22nd, Leveland Invitational Track Meet. March 22nd, High School Softball versus Monahans, 5 and 7 p.m. March 23rd, Classic Tyler Magnus Team Roping, 9 a.m., Pecos County Coliseum. 23rd, Fort Stockton High School Sub-Varsity Baseball at Midland Trinity Doubleheader at noon. 26th, High School Softball at Andrews, 5 and 7 p.m. Fort Stockton. March 26, Fort Stockton High School Baseball at Andrews, 4 and 7 p.m. April 1st, Fort Stockton High School Softball at Greenwood, 5 and 7 p.m. April 1st, Fort Stockton High School Baseball at Greenwood, 4 and 7 p.m. April 2nd, District Track Meet at Fort Stockton. April 3rd, UIL Academic Meet at Monahans. April 4th, Track Meet at Fort Stockton. April 5th, High School Softball versus Pecos, 5 and 7 p.m. April 5th, High School Baseball versus Pecos, 4:30 and 7 p.m. April 6th, Fort Stockton JV White Baseball versus Van Horn Doubleheader at noon. April 9th, Fort Stockton High School Softball at Seminole, 5 and 7 p.m. 9th, Fort Stockton High School Baseball at Seminole, 4:30 and 7 p.m. April 12th, Fort Stockton High School Softball at Monahans, 5 and 7 p.m. April 12th, High School Baseball at Monahans, 4:30 and 7 p.m. April 16th, High School Baseball versus Andrews, 4 and 7 p.m. April 19th, High School Baseball versus Greenwood, 4 and 7 p.m. April 20th, High School White Baseball at Greenwood, doubleheader at noon. April 23rd, High School Baseball at Pecos, 4 and 7 p.m. April 27th, High School White Baseball at Andrews, doubleheader at noon. El Buen Vecino reopens after remodel. For years, El Buen Vecino has struggled with leaky water pipes, no air conditioning, damaged windows, and poor electrical connections. After holding a rummage sale to raise the necessary funds to make these much-needed repairs, they have now reopened and will continue to serve the Fort Stockton community from their location at 408 South Valentine. A crew of workers spent the last few weeks stuccoing over the exposed adobes, installing new double-paned windows, and connecting the HVAC system donated to them by Abraham Bernard of Oberkamp Supply in Midland. As one of the few locations in Fort Stockton for gently used clothing and housewares operated out of an old building owned by the First Methodist Church, El Buen Vecino has been helping people for more than 20 years. Now the little thrift store that could is back in business and ready to serve you. New hours are Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 1 to 5 p.m. Come by our store to find those items you need. Pioneering wildfire alert system tested during the Texas Panhandle fires. Thousands of people across the Texas Panhandle received wireless emergency alerts February 26-27 warning of an imminent, dangerous wildfire on the landscape with the potential to expand. These notifications from the A&M Forest Service utilized a first-of-its-kind process, benefiting from major advancements in fire and weather prediction technology and a foundation in strong interagency relationships. This new fire prediction system allowed local, state, and federal fire agencies to notify the public and other firefighting partners 9 times faster than average. The announcements requested by local emergency management officials and A&M Forest Service and issued by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Weather Service are among the first multi-notification processes that have been used for a large-scale wildfire in Texas. Built on the expertise of fire behavior and prediction knowledge, the Integrated Team Fire Warning Paradigm process was initially demonstrated in Oklahoma in 2022 and 23 after being created in response to the devastating 2018 Camp Fire in California. The new process serves as an improved coordinated method for wildfire detection, notification, and action. The process was designed by members of the Southern Great Plains Wildfire Outbreak Working Group, including Texas A&M Forest Service, Oklahoma Forestry Services, National Weather Service, and Kansas Forest Service personnel. This has been a long-standing work in progress, said Todd Lindley, Operations Officer, Brad Smith of the A&M Forest Service, and Drew Daly of the Oklahoma Service helped us to work through retrospective simulations of fire disasters in the Southern Plains using the combined knowledge of environmental conditions and technology from the satellites to depict fire behavior that is particularly dangerous. A&M Forest Service brought a new perspective for the other agencies in combining fire prediction and weather with knowledge of fire history and behavior. Smith served as a catalyst in the expansion of prediction resources and technology for the state, implementing more than 150 new weather stations statewide that are used for fire potential monitoring. The satellite hotspot detection process of the multi-agency warning system is initiated when a red flag fire day is in effect. A red flag warning is issued by the Weather Service when the combination of weather conditions and composite fuel moisture support extreme fire danger. On these days, the National Weather Service and emergency management services within the warned area repeatedly assess fire conditions. A&M Forest Service Predictive Services utilizes additional tools to monitor fire potential by measuring the fire environment, including fuel and weather. These factors, paired with an extensive knowledge of fire behavior history in the area, can be used by the A&M Forest Service to inform the National Weather Service of local communities on emergency management decisions. The National Weather Service monitors conditions on red flag days using infrared channels of the new GOES 16 and 17 satellites. We use these channels of the satellites to detect heat, said Doug Weber, the senior forecaster and fire program coordinator. When a fire hits, it heats up really quick. We're able to see the flicker on the satellite immediately, and it jumps out on the map. Following the initial detection and assessment of a fire through satellite imagery, National Weather Service members notify local emergency management teams and state fire and forestry officials of the fire. More than 350 Texas Panhandle officials and emergency management personnel are currently subscribed to the initial alert system and receive wildfire threat notifications. Once notified, local officials assess the threat of the fire to determine whether a wildfire notification for community members is appropriate. Factors such as fire location, fuels the fire is burning, and weather are used by state and local officials to determine the fire's rate of spread and potential impact, which will help determine if a fire warning notification is appropriate. Within minutes, local officials can request a wildfire or evacuation notification from the Weather Service to community members within a specified perimeter, like other national disaster alerts issued by the National Weather Service. Throughout the notification process, the interest of local emergency management teams is paramount to the issuing of the notifications by the Weather Service. The improved notification process emboldens local emergency management teams to make critical decisions that will affect community members with the help and support of the state officials and neighboring communities. It's highly encouraged that local emergency management officials initiate the fire warning. A majority of the fire warnings issued February 26, 27 were issued by the local and county emergency management officials in the Panhandle. Lindley noted that the development of new technology and strong interagency relationships have aided in the timeliness of the new notification process. This entire process has been accomplished in 9 minutes on average, ranging from 3 minutes to 15. What is significant about that is that previously we were only authorized to send notifications to the public at the request of local emergency managers, which took 80 minutes. We have cut that process down significantly so that we can move forward leaning and proactive on getting these alerts to the public. Clankerts expressed his hopes that the new warning process will provide timelier notification of wildfires, more accurate fire behavior imaging, and a safer environment for community members and first responders. With a fire season ahead, these alerts are a quick and efficient way to notify community members of a dangerous fire. We have worked on this process in the hopes of improving public safety. Saul Ross, Science Math Programs, presented at Texas Academy of Science meeting in Odessa. Saul Ross State University's Biology, Chemistry, and Mathematics programs participated in the Texas Academy of Science meeting at the University of Texas Permian Basin in Odessa, March 1st and 3rd. Four faculty and two undergraduate students in attendance made five presentations at the event. Dr. Ritzy and Ben Thomas presented gray oak mortality and an updated flora of Saul Ross's Hancock Hill. Dr. Angela Brown and Dr. Jennifer Miller together presented outreach in South Texas for the increasing STEM education interest. The presentations represented work conducted by students and faculty in the Natural Science Department and the Computer, Mathematical, and Physical Sciences Department, covering a variety of different research areas and topic sections. Next year's annual meeting will be held at Baylor University. The Texas Academy of Sciences' mission is to promote scientific research in Texas colleges and universities, encourage research as a part of student learning, and to enhance the professional development of its members. Groundwater District rejects Belding Farms proposal. The Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District rejected a proposal by Belding Farms to consider changing district rules, which the farms believes will protect the Edwards Trinity Aquifer. Belding Farms, a pecan grower in Fort Stockton, expressed regret over the decision by the district, which Belding says will add protections for the Edwards Trinity Aquifer that underlies Pecos County and feeds Comanche Springs. The district on Monday denied a petition by Belding Farms to open the rulemaking process for consideration of Belding's proposals to add year-round protections of the aquifer to the current protections that are triggered in wintertime only. Belding Farms attorney Ryan Reed said denial ostensibly was based on the district's belief that its current rules are protective of the aquifer. We regret that the Groundwater District passed up an opportunity to boost protection of the aquifers in its jurisdiction. We fear that the district's current rules leave the aquifer vulnerable to depletion over the long term, a risk that could grow as water is exported out of the county. Belding Farms' proposed rules would add aquifer thresholds that trigger cutbacks in groundwater pumping if aquifer water levels fall too low at any time during the year, whereas current rules only contemplate cutbacks based on wintertime levels. The proposals are based on aquifer drawdowns, which is the regulatory method used by most groundwater districts in Texas, rather than aquifer recovery, which the district rules target and is less common. Water sustainability is essential for our community, our farmers, and our industry, and all who depend on our aquifers, said Joe Schuster. I would prefer discussions now between all parties because of the aquifer recharge period of time, the aquifer drawdown period of time, and the unknown impact of pumping 28,000 acre-feet of water someday. Belding Farms is not opposed to water exports if adequate rules are in place to protect the aquifer. The cities of Midland, Abilene, San Angelo have contracted to buy water from Fort Stockton Holdings, which is owned by the Williams family, which will be exported from Pecos County. When contacted by the Pioneer Tuesday afternoon, Groundwater Conservation General Manager Ty Edwards said, "This is the first petition in Texas that anyone can file with a groundwater conservation district. They filed the first one in the state, and we took it very seriously, and we looked at every single issue that they addressed. And at the end of the day, we found it is not needed." He added that the district voted 8-0 to deny it. But that doesn't have anything to do with Williams permit. They have the most restrictive permit ever granted in the history of Texas, and if aquifer problems ever do exist, they're going to be cut back. It's in contracts, it's in writing, and the people that are using historical permits are the ones that are most protected, including Belding Farms. The petition is the first in the state under a new law that allows landowners to ask local groundwater conservation districts to adopt or modify their rules prospectively, rather than having to resort to legal challenges after actions are taken. In light of the district's denial of our petition, Belding Farms will consider all of its administrative and legal options. The farm uses groundwater to irrigate its pecan orchard and has invested millions of dollars to increase the efficiency of its water uses over the 60 years of operation.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.